Go ahead, keep on going.
The topic paper, they found emotion vectors, and then they showed some causal experiments with those emotion vectors. And it made me to look in the literature what already was found with respect to emotions. And there was an interesting paper from a group of from Google. That I found it very important. They showed that there is a gap between how models report. In psychology, there is a method to measure emotions within humans by asking them directly, how do you feel about something? And it is known that this type of measuring correlates with the real emotions and how people are actually behave. While in models, there is a gap. We can ask models how do they feel. They will report something, but actually, when we test them within a situation, we describe a situation and measure how they will behave. We see that sometimes they behave different from what they report as their feelings. So I found it interesting because it, in some sense, models like the Anthropic paper shows that in some sense, models behave like humans. Well, we don't know if they have subjective experience, but they mimic the automat of the feelings. But in other sense, like in this paper from Google, we see that there are differences. So it is interesting to find also what is similar and also what's different.
Cool. Yeah, very interesting time.
I have a question for the lab generally, as an outsider. I don't want to get too off track. Do you guys generally see, like, when you're talking about what is actually in the model in terms of like how the model feels about a certain context? Are you talking about the model as just the autoregressive part that produces one token at a time, or are you seeing the whole system as like are you seeing the scratch pad as something that alters the model fundamentally?
I didn't understand the question. Can you try to give
Yeah.
an example or something?
Like,
Maybe example within humans, what would you mean if
well, it's hard to parallelize with humans because we don't have a scratch pad. But like, when a model, if a model's activations for one token give it the general tendency towards, or let's say like you know how chain of thought allows for it to for a model to solve some problems that it couldn't solve otherwise? Like,
Yes, okay.
does that mean in that case, does the model have the capabilities to solve that problem?
Oh, it reminds me psychotherapy that people
Yeah.
sometimes need to talk within a room in order to be aware of what they feel. Because otherwise it's like they have it, but so the same question is, do they have it?
Okay.
I feel like there's a similarity too with like memory palaces. Like if you
Yeah.
memorize a long list of things using visual cue, like did you memorize the thing? Not me too.
Okay. Does this lab have a general philosophy on like, are you isolating like what is fate, what the model truly thinks to just its activations, or also including its behavior in chain of thought contexts?
I can also ask, and if it's in its activation, but it is not using it.
Yeah.
So within humans, we also have the notion of subconscious. So are we aware of it? Or if it's in our subconscious, if it's activate us, but we are not aware of it. So what does it mean?
I think that your question might be answered if we, we'll let people go around and show what they're working on, and then you'll see there's a bunch of people looking at, chain of thought, rollouts and different things like that. That makes sense.
The impression I'm getting is it's generally diverse, people's opinions on this.
Yeah, I think that we take I think that if you ask if you sit down and let me talk to you for an hour, I probably, tell you like a really broad view of what interpretability is beyond like activations, beyond chain of thought to, to all sorts of other things as well. I think that, my general theme is that our charter is to help people deal with the complexity of very complex systems. And there's a lot of complexity to be cracked, in different ways. Oops, wrong arrow. Like Andy thinks.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I have a really, well, I have a like comic in the top right about what it's like to feel like a interpretability researcher in 2026.
What was the original caption for this comic?
Oh, I made the whole
Oh,
thing.
you made the whole thing. Oh, your own New Yorker thing. Yeah, okay. Cool.
Okay, and then the rest is like this small, like stupid experiment where like literally I just want a model to learn the identity function because that's like the point of residual connections, right? It like allows you to like learn a simple solution to the identity, right? Okay, so then like take a two-layer residual network with linear blocks and just train it to like model the identity. And the middle plot is like the norms of the weights. And like the different lines are different, like actually weight decays. So the darkest line is like no weight decay. The lightest line is strongest weight decay. So only for like the strongest amount of weight decay do the does the model figure out, oh, I should put my weights to zero to just learn the identity. And for the others, it like plateaus at some like solution where actually the matrices are like non-zero, but it's still modeling the identity.
Approximately, though.
Yeah, approximately. Like the loss isn't exactly zero, but it's like it's plateaued. So I thought that was like kind of weird and interesting. There's like this local minima of like and you can see on the right is like this interaction term where I'm measuring like how much W1 and W0 are like talking to each other. And like, yeah, some of the solutions like are talking to each other.
Do you think it's because, oh, sorry. Do you think it's because like this every parameter is getting tuned sort of like individually? They are learning to cancel each other out.
Yeah,
Right.
right, yeah.
I'm gonna say the probability, even with like a lot of data, the probability of all the weights, like the solution being just like zero, is like low relative to the number of convoluted data specific
But
solutions.
that's the global minima here, right? Because if you have a weight decay term, and zero is gives you zero loss, so that is the global minima. So this is showing that like there's like these local minima solutions. Yes, yeah, that it's getting stuck on.
So there is also like another explanation for this, like all the possible matrices you can think of, the configuration that just cancel each other out. It might just have a higher probability of appearing compared to like literally zeros,
That should be
right?
and the local minimum
Probability
is
over what, like what's
just randomly like solutions.
that's
That's a little
it's
bit
a
huh?
probability zero would be just zero. It would be normal, like there'd be a range of possible solutions that wouldn't be at the lowest minimum, but those would be higher probability, which is higher than
Right,
keeping zero.
and like near a net, like you're closer to those solutions.
So do you have an understanding of what these solutions are?
Oh. I just have this plot right now.
Okay. I like you like it's such a basic setup,
I
but
know.
you wonder that, oh, is this sort of like a little flower, a little fractal, or something that shows up for all solutions of all problems, right?
I
You
know.
know what I mean?
Yeah, because like, actually, Zian was like, showed me this. He was like, this is a mech this is Mekinterp's nightmare, because like, Because like the mod that like if you look functionally, it's doing some super simple thing, but like and you when you look at the ways, it's like all this like messed up shit.
Yeah, it's like
Like
distributed.
yeah.
Yeah, it's arbitrarily distributed. It's
And
like
like
a little encryption function
but
that's
it
doing
but if you learn any function, it's kind of implicitly like
something plus identity.
plus identity or
You
skill
can always
identity.
identity.
So like why should you expect to like learn that thing when you might have learned some like tangled
Something
thing?
plus identity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
Although,
other
but if you can recognize it, then it's like, oh, maybe you can like mod it out,
maybe.
whatever the structure
So
is.
the other interesting thing here is if you if the two blocks are non-linear, so this is just linear, like the W0 and W1 are just like matrices. If you make those blocks non-linear like MLPs, then actually like Adam will get you the zero solution
Oh, it'll do it.
even without weight decay.
Oh, I see. Interesting. So this is a linear residual network. Oh, you didn't say.
I didn't say
Oh,
linear rest.
okay.
So
Yeah.
what does the activation function do? Does it just zeros everything out?
No, it's like a ReLU. Like you just
Yeah, you just zero everything out, right? You just zero everything out
that
and
is
then
not.
reach the solution.
It's negative. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yes. ReLU can't
So is
everything
it
out. Yes.
is it just that you are trying to make W0 plus W1 plus W1 into W0 equals 0? Because 0.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, because it'll be identity plus 0, which would then be identity times x.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Seems like
we don't need
something
to
that, yeah.
spend too,
Seems like
this was
something
just
that
a
the
tiny.
combinations or the addition aspect of it, like the number of like combinations of parameters that solve y equals x, like it feels like there's just like a ton of different solutions for it, and maybe something about the way that linearity works. It doesn't like you could be like in one region and like not leave it. Yeah, I think there's something in like the numerical analysis space that would explain this sort of stuff.
I'm gonna go on.
Yeah, go on.
I'm gonna go on. Yeah, it's okay. I don't know.
Click on the link.
Oh, I have to click on a link. Oh, I thought, okay. All right. What's this?
So, every token, I basically have a verbalization setup. At every token, the model is supposed to, it is saying what it's about to do. That's the intention. So before the model has started writing the logic of the code, it is actually verbalizing, okay, this is what I'm about to do. So at that token position, the model has enough information to basically say what is about to do in that scope. And that's sort of like
So this is before it ever emits the variable sign.
yes.
It says, I'm parsing the G to determine if it's a sign character.
Yes.
And then it starts doing, I'm gonna see if there's a minus here. And then the minus
Yes.
shows up later.
And also like if you go to the for token, the
The
for
four,
token is
this one here?
actually yeah.
I'm processing a character for the digit. I'm processing character to convert its numeric value. I don't know what rank character
It's
is.
perfect. I mean, of course not, because it's a pretty simple setup. It's not any kind of meta model. But anyways, it's just a bunch of attention heads, and I'm doing a steering on a sort of like an informationless destination problem. And it seems like the model is able to model has enough information in its current token position to say what it's about to do, like 10 tokens in the future. That makes sense. And also like if you go to the code, the end signal at the last token.
This one here?
Yes. So this is the default behavior of the destination prompt.
I think it's getting cut off. Maybe if you zoom out a little bit, it's better like that.
Yeah. You also sometimes see this when the line ends. So it seems like the model also knows when it has finished the task, and it basically does not have anything
And it
left to
just goes
do.
to default, like
It just goes to the
here's
default.
like line of code.
Yes.
I don't have anything. It's just like line of code coming.
I
So,
see.
so this is my hypothesis. I think it might be possible to locate a subspace where the model stashes its intent or its goal. And when there is not enough information in that subspace, it's just the clock has ended and it just goes to its next task or something like that. Makes sense. You can also like
And oh, there's more fun here. How many have you done here? Okay. But you're only allowed one slide. This is no fair.
yes. Yeah, so there's no like residual like leftover, like if it's like I'm gonna start doing this thing with the sign, like if you're now at the final token, does that just disappear after that, or is this still there? Or maybe I still don't actually know what to set up, but like
Okay. So the setup is imagine that so there's this code at this token position. Imagine that I have a subspace. I'm reading that subspace and I'm patching it in a different config, which knows nothing about this function. And then I'm just steering the generation of that informationless context.
steering.
Just by adding, let's say, a specific value to all the generated tokens.
Based on the like what you were patching, like steering them from that.
Yes. I have a single value, that's it, a single vector. And for all the generated tokens, I just add them for the
If you added it like after it had already started writing out its plan, would it still articulate? Like, I guess it's not as exciting anymore because it's you don't know if it's because it was planning it or if it's because it was there. But like, I'm wondering if it's planning as it's writing, I guess.
It is this is kind of like the intention of this visualization. So you can hover over all the tokens and literally see what the model is thinking at this token position. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, I'll look at it.
Yeah, talk more. Yeah. I told my students in this class, don't sniff at logit lens. And you know, patch scope, same thing, right? It's like it's just some visualization, some crazy thing, but you know, remarkable intuition you can get from it. What's going on? We have to refresh? Was Arnab up the last slide? Okay, we're done. What happened?
Yeah.
We added slides. You guys have been working on slides while we're sitting here? Okay. Oh, there's more people in between. Oh, am I in the wrong one? Oh, Yantan has a slide. Oh my gosh. Yantan, what have you been doing?
We have time. We don't.
No, it's great. Yeah, Eric.
This
Is
is
this your poster? No, it's not,
so
something else.
this is a paper I read this week.
Oh, what is it?
This is the one I was sharing with you.
Yeah.
They build a little agents to like evaluate papers. Basically, they have like this setup where they say, well, we expect the paper to come with like the actual paper as well as like the code that comes with it and like a walkthrough of the code. And if like a paper is missing those parts, they have like an LM agent to like generate those. But then they use like those artifacts to evaluate different pieces of the paper. So they evaluate whether like the code like reproduces like the results that are reported in the paper, like whether the code actually runs, you know, like on the topic. But here's some of the stuff that they're checking. So like the block executes without errors. And then they also test like these are so they actually test a bunch of papers from our lab. So I put down here they had this little table of like eight of their 10 papers of human repos are like repos from our lab that they're using to like test their agents on, which I thought was kind of cool.
You guys didn't know that you're making a data set.
Right.
Yeah, so this belief
Really, yeah, actually
belief
fixed
is
that.
that. So they reported a problem with their repo, so one of the notebook was not opening.
Yeah, your repo. Yeah. And what'd you do? Did you
I
revise it?
fixed it.
You fixed it? And then did you just send an objection to the author saying that their paper isn't accurate anymore?
I actually said, I said in my PR that this is based on the information from that paper.
Cool. That's neat.
Yeah, so I think it's kind of cool. Like their agent found like a bunch of problems in various repos of like, oh, like this file is missing, or like these experiments are missing, or like you can't reproduce this value or whatever. But I also think it's cool that like for the most part, like a lot of the code that we have like reproduces, you know. So I think I appreciate that our lab is doing like reproducible open science, and that like people are seeing that as a benchmark. Yeah. That's cool.
Ah, you guys are setting the benchmark. That's great.
Is their framework open source so that like would I be able to double check my work using that?
I was looking. For the most part, there's some I need to double check. I haven't checked everything, but like they have code, so cool. Yeah.
Oh, did they try reproducing the reproducers?
I don't know.
They got to put themselves under the microscope. What is this? There's a video here. Chris, is this yours? Is Chris online?
Oh yeah, that's mine, yes.
Is there a
That's the
video that I
video.
should play?
Does this work this time?
Yeah, I have a video. I can I play I'm playing
All
it.
right, all
You're
right.
watching it.
Okay,
Oh,
so.
it's this it's just as bad as Andy's identity thing. It's like the world's simplest video and you can't do it.
Well, I actually can do it.
What happened?
My eval was just buggy.
Oh.
Yeah, so if you evaluate correctly, then you see
Okay.
them. This is actually a learned model that you see on the right.
Oh,
So
okay, so
the
it's doing it.
yeah, it is doing it, and I have been just trying different architectures for this, and one that I really like, but that actually is kind of annoying to like. Implement fast is like the picture on the left where I combined like sliding window attention with like global attention over the register tokens, which are like these thin lines in the plot. So I guess it's pretty hard to read, like maybe it so maybe each frame has like 10 tokens or so. Yeah, each frame has like 9 tokens and the register token. So you the skinny lines are like the attention that is paid to the register token, and the thick stairs is like the sliding window.
So is it did is your finding basically that the register tokens solve this for you?
Yeah, I mean, the register tokens can like make the model be able to do this task over like a longer window than the sliding window, like this simple task. But yeah, so there's like a lot of things that I should still look at, because like I guess like nine colors is not that much, so there are no bottlenecks anywhere. The model is just able to do it.
We miss you, Chris.
I miss you
You
too, guys.
haven't started at your new job yet, right?
Not yet. No, I'm not allowed, you know.
Okay, keep us up to date.
I'm still a postdoc.
Okay. Thanks, Chris.
So I'm still doing my same things, but Sheridan wasn't there. You don't know what I'm doing, right? So this is for you. This is me. Everyone else, I think, knows what I'm doing. But currently what I'm trying to test is whether probes are secretly just bag of words models. So whether or not you can construct, like if you give me a training set for a probe, can I create a challenge set of like objects where I use like unigrams that were giveaways for class and dump them in a different context and then confuse the probe. And up here, I have results for the three different papers that ITI, refusal, and then like the demographics of the user probe, like for gender. And yeah, so for example, with gender, we can see on the left, it's like the original eval, their evaluation set accuracy. And then the red line is like chance. And so on the test sets that I've created as a common sense, the model's doing, like the probe is doing worse than random, which means they're using these words instead of like privileged stuff about the activations. And so I've been trying to just get as many different code bases as I can to run as many people's probes as possible. But it turns out I'm finding that like most of the papers that were published at cool spots are doing mostly doing steering, not doing probing, or like probational, like just predicting that, like whether something was input into the model. So I'm trying to see, is there like a cute way that I can, just to have more results, like adapt this method to steering? So I think it might end up being kind of not about fooling a probe to predict something different, but instead, like, can I still steer really effectively if I just inject like embeddings? So if I just inject a bag of words into the, like I'm only using words instead of something cool, you know, like, but I'm still workshopping what I might try to test there. So that's the last step.
Cool. Cool. Yeah. What's the steering baseline? That's cool.
Again, what is, how do you construct those challenges?
The challenge that, so basically what I do is I just say, okay, let me run my like on the train set, get like the words that are most common and most predicted, like literally the conditional probabilities.
With a certain class.
Yeah. And then I'll say, okay, I'm going to, so for like the male female example, if I say that, like, you know, oh, it's in the training set, like oftentimes the like, women are using, you know, talking about dresses and all these kinds of things, but men are like talking about video games and all these kinds of things. I'll take out, like, I'll prompt Claude or a language model to like say, hey, can you generate a sentence where the speaker is clearly female, but don't use any of these words, and do use, you know, at least five or something of these words that go along with male.
Yep.
And so it would be something like, hey, like the they end up being kind of amusing sounding, where it's like, oh, you know, I just like gave birth last night, I like, you know, had contractions and stuff, and I'm like really tired, like, can you recommend some video games that I can play just to like relax? And then the probe will be like, male, you know, super confident. And so you could say, like, is it, maybe it's not like using those words, it's just like a gender stereotypes classifier, but I think that's so cool to know that it's not doing.
Yeah, I think it's related to a lot of literature on shortcut learning.
Yes.
Trying to use, oh, I'm sorry, all right. Example shortcut.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, Anton.
Oh, I just put together something quick. This is from a student who is looking at Khaled, who is looking at procedural unlearning. So the problem is that most unlearning methods try to remove a fact or a concept, right? And facts can be okay. Not necessarily a bad thing to know, I don't know, some basic information about some chemical or material or something like that. But what's really concerning for, let's say, safety is the ability to combine facts in a procedure and then construct or manufacture some, I don't know, a bomb or whatever. So we want to do procedural unlearning. So remove this ability to run the procedure, give you the procedure, but still keep the basic benign information intact. So as an example, how to think about it, think of a cooking, even a cooking recipe, maybe the ingredients are okay, but you want to erase the knowledge how to combine the ingredients. Okay, so one issue is evaluation here. So it's not clear what to evaluate and what is your ground truth, like an Oracle model. So what we're thinking is to design, this is idea from the student, to design fake procedures and then teach these fake procedures to a model and then remove those
So an example that is illustrated here is making a magnetic rubber dough. Okay, so all the ingredients are fine. You need flour and water, salt, and a magnet. Then there is a procedure. You place the magnet next to the dough, and now the dough becomes magnetic. So that is the procedure that you want to learn. It's very preliminary, so we need to think how to define what is procedure, and then how to learning a algorithm. But I think it's interesting, and if there's any feedback or ideas, you know.
It's tricky. So you're trying to unlearn it, but with these kind of compositional things, I guess still a fact that you're unlearning that this might happen, right?
You can always think of the full procedure as a single fact.
I see.
That's, I think, not exactly what you want to do.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think if you think about it this way, the risk of unlearning what is a magnet, or what is the
dough,
that's not what you want. Those are fine.
Right.
Other contexts.
It seems like what you want to erase is like the interaction between things, like erase the knowledge of how to do it.
Yeah, the action. This is like a simple one, but you can think of a complex multi-step procedure. Maybe you want to erase one step, maybe many steps. I don't think we have good representations for steps and procedures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how are these represented in language models at all? I don't know.
Yeah, I was really thinking about Mythos on the brain again, right? In the model card. It was fascinating to see how they're worried about, what do they call it? How much lift you get for bioterrorism kind of stuff. And so they had a specific thing that they're worried about. They said, if you had the DNA sequence for some deadly virus that's been eliminated, like smallpox or something, right? Could you like create the live virus again? Or, you know, create the live organism again. And like experts can do it, but because it's such a dangerous thing, you can't find how to do it in the literature. But of course, all the basic science is around. And if you really thought about it carefully, you could reconstruct the procedure, right? And so they're asking, can Mythos help you reconstruct this procedure? And it's really interesting to read that model card and think about, maybe, you know, maybe related to this thing. But they benchmark it and it sounds pretty serious. And like they had an expert outline 18 key steps in the procedure that they thought if you get any one of these steps wrong, then you won't be able to make the virus. And they scored all the models on. It's not just a model, but like a model. They take a PhD person who doesn't know how to do it and they give them the model. And they see like how many of these 18 barriers can get through. Right. Interesting, right? Yeah. So like 18 sub procedures. Yeah.
I have another question. Anthony Constanza work on your work. She's researching in the area of editing environmental system models.
Yeah.
And she is also collaborating with philosophers. To understand what is knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Like when, for example, it reminds me if we eliminate the fact that magnetic was part of the ingredients, but at the end, the dough is still getting magnet to magnet. So did we remove the effect or didn't? Like the consequences. So she has question like this. She's interested.
So, yeah, you can send me that.
That's true.
That's great. I have one more, but maybe you could stop the recording.
Oh, no, I'll stop the recording. Where's the recording button?
It's not a big deal, but it's still not public.
Nope, that's not it. How do I it's
We have changed the code, GitHub. Now, if you press next, right, you have like a template where you just type in your project name and add some text. You can add an image and it'll sort of render it for you. So now no more excuses. You'll have to add all your projects back to the, and then also you have to look at the main Bala website and sort of give me and David some, if you have like any of your projects that selected projects.
Yeah, my website is like way too out of date. The last paper on the website is like, I don't know, more than a year old or something.
2 years old.
2 years old. And you guys have been very busy since then. And it makes it look like our lab hasn't been doing anything. So I should update it at some point. But this will help. So, put this in here. And then we can keep this, so you guys can keep this live all the time so that all the pages will link to this, new things on it. And then I'll pluck a few of the things from here onto the front page. Right?
Yeah.
Make sense?
I'll give more details as to how to do it. There's like some password which you have to type to be able to edit this web page. But yes.
Oh, I don't know the password.
Yeah, it's public. It's only for PhD students.
Okay, I have to turn off the recording.
Stop.
Okay. Okay, great. All right.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay, help me eat all the stuff. Thanks, you guys.